From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum in our opening hour this morning, we begin with reaction to an analysis of the rocket launch yesterday morning by North Korea on that nation's northwest coast near China, and launched in spite of international warnings and the threat of more United Nations sanctions. Then at 9:30, the Obama administration announced on Tuesday its recognition of the Syrian opposition, officially known as the National Coalition of Syrian Revolutionary and Opposition Forces. We'll discuss what this is apt to mean in the ongoing two-year civil war inside of Syria that has already claimed some 40,000 lives. Forum is next. Join us after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. After multiple failed attempts, North Korea successfully launched a missile on Wednesday morning, and the United States, Japan, and South Korea immediately condemned the launch. Even North Korea's ally, China, expressed concern. And is this launch a sign of a greater nuclear reach, and how should nations, including the United States, as well as the United Nations, respond? That's our focus for this first Forum segment, and with us in studio is Philip Yun. He's Executive Director and Chief Operating Officer of Plowshares Fund, previously served as Senior Advisor for the Democratic People's Republic of Korea in the Clinton administration, and has traveled to North Korea a number of times, met the late Kim Jong-il. He's also a former Senior Advisor to former Secretary of Defense William J. Perry and to Ambassador Wendy Sherman. Welcome, Philip Yun.
Thank you very much. Great to be here.
Glad to have you here. Also glad to have David Kung, who is joining us by phone this morning. He's Professor of International Relations and directs the Korean Studies Institute at the University of Southern California, and is co-author of the book Nuclear North Korea, A Debate on Engagement Strategies. It was last in North Korea back in 2007. Welcome, Professor Kung. Good to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, glad to have you both. And Philip Yun, let me begin with you. We're getting different reports about the possibility that the satellite is tumbling out of control and has failed. I think we're going to have to obviously stay on this story to find out, even story going on the web about a possible collision. But the fact is that there's triumphant celebrating going on in North Korea, and there's extraordinary nationalism here, and this solidifies, it would seem, at least on the face of it, Kim Jong-un.
Yes, it would seem that way. I mean, this is something that they've been trying to do. We know that they've wanted to put a satellite up. They've made this is their fifth attempt, and they actually got something into space, and it orbited. Now, it's going to take a while for us to assess whether or not it's actually tumbling out of control or not, and we'll find out probably in the coming weeks. It's only been 2 or 3 days, really, since this has gone up. But it's something that Kim Jong-un, in fact, needed a win, and this is exactly what he's got. And I don't think necessarily that the folks in North Korea are going to know or really care that there's some issues with the actual orbit.
What about the timing of this? He fired a number of generals, demoted other generals. He got an election coming up in South Korea. It would seem like the timing was, premeditated.
Absolutely. You have to realize that North Koreans, when they do something like this, they have precious few resources, and when they shoot something up like a rocket, which was considerable resources, they're trying to do many, many things at the same time. So one is sort of domestic considerations. Kim Jong-un needed a win. He had to placate the military. There's an international respect aspect of this too. In some ways, North Korea was a joke for a long time this year because of the failure, the prolific failure of the missile in April 2012. There are technical reasons that they need to do this in order to make their missile technology better. And so there's the competition, as you said, with South Korea. And I don't discount that they wanted to influence the election. We'll have to see if that really does happen or not. And then finally, there's a sales and marketing aspect to all of this as well. People are going to see that they have this technical capability, and they're going to people want to buy it.
And David Kung, the stated goal, of course, is that this is a weather satellite they're sending in orbit, this three-stage rocket for Earth observation satellite. But it seems as if certainly what this is all about delivering the potential of delivering a nuclear warhead. I'm wondering, from your perspective, we have seen this, it's an iteration of something. It's deja vu all over again. What's different here? Is there anything different here?
Well, the rocket's not different. They're getting closer to being able to use this rocket. What is different, of course, is that they were successful this time. But I should point out that they are a long way away from having a deliverable weapon. They managed to get something up in the air, but they still have to worry about getting it down. Re-entry, being able to put a much heavier payload on it, and then getting the actual weapon to explode where they want, which is one reason they like the test, because it's very hard to do, and they're a long ways away.
They'd also have to miniaturize nuclear weapons if they were going to go that route, right?
Absolutely right. I mean, they've been able to make a big thing that blows up sort of like a nuclear weapon, but it's not a deliverable bomb yet where they can get it small enough and light enough to put it on a missile and send it somewhere. So they're a long way away. And I should also point out that it's unlikely that North Korea is going to use one of these weapons. We can deter them. If they launch one, we'll know and we'll attack them back. It's more likely, and the concern is really, that they're going to sell this kind of technology to other countries, such as maybe Syria or Iran.
Well, if indeed there's a lot of, and when I said, have we seen this before, I meant particularly in terms of the motives, trying to get brinksmanship with Washington and get more diplomatic concessions and work, well, get economic aid particularly, but maybe a peace treaty. There's been a talk about all those things as being the motives behind what North Korea has done. What perhaps makes it somewhat different is, even if we were to sit down at the table, where do you negotiate in terms of selling this kind of weaponry or the knowledge of this kind of weaponry?
You mean, there's a lot of questions about why North Korea would be doing this. And in general, I agree with Philip. I think there's much more internal reasons than external. Maybe they get some bargaining leverage or something, but it certainly doesn't appear that it's going to be very successful. If anything, it's going to make them more isolated with more sanctions. So I don't think they're viewing it as that much of a lever, but I think it's much more internal that they've been working on this for a long time. It is very good to be able to tell your people, look what I've achieved. And so I think it's driven more by internal motivations at this point.
Well, Philip Yun, there is China, supposedly. We often hear North Korea is a client state of China, and China did respond to this last satellite launch negatively, critically, but doesn't seem to have much ability to strong-arm North Korea or bring them under control in any way.
Yeah, I think there's sort of a myth related to China to some degree. Some people feel very strongly that China has the ability to change North Korean behavior. And for a variety of reasons, China has shown either the inability or unwillingness to do so. The relationship between the Chinese and North Koreans is not a very close one, despite what they say publicly. In fact, there's contempt, mutual contempt on both sides related to that. And I think one great indication of this is that the new Chinese leadership, just after they were installed, sent a delegation to North Korea. And no doubt, at that meeting, the North Koreans said, well, we're going to announce we're going to be shooting another missile, and here's the corridor. And then as soon as they left, no sooner than that, I think it was a couple days. David, you may know the exact timing, but they announced that they were having this corridor, they were doing this. So in many ways, it's sort of the Chinese, again, trying to persuade the North Koreans not to do this, and the North Koreans saying, you know, don't even try to change our mind on this.
But if we're talking about the domestic importance here, David Kung, China is one of those countries that feeds North Korea, literally. And North Korea is, well, you know, almost on the verge of starvation, it seems, constantly. It needs China. It needs China not only for food, but for resources.
Yeah. I mean, China is very important to North Korea's economic survival. But that doesn't mean that China is able to dictate to North Korea what they're going to do. And especially in situations like this where you have national prestige or leaders' prestige, I think the argument that the North Korean regime was saying to themselves is it's worth paying a price if China decides to hold up some food shipments. And it's not even clear that China would be willing to go that far.
Yeah, David, I think the other aspect of this
Philip,
you have to realize, too, is that North Korea knows that China is doing is sort of, in a sense, supporting or letting North Korea do what it wants because China has decided for the time being it's in its interest to do so. In other words, what they, you know, they're worried about North Korean provocation, the missiles, the nuclear weapons, but ultimately they don't want a war or a conflict on the peninsula, nor do they want the country to collapse because all the refugees that would go into China. So while we may have similar goals, their priorities are much higher to avoid a collapse or a conflict. So North Korea says, well, that's their interest. That's the Chinese interest. So they're not doing us any favors. They're doing it because they feel it's important. The Chinese are doing it because it's important to them. And that's what they're thinking, and that's how they view it. So that's why they're going to do whatever they want to do. The North Koreans.
Let's just talk about the region, though, for a moment and follow up on that, Philip Young. I mean, Japan is certainly worried about this. Obviously, South Korea is deeply worried about this, and they're within range now. The United States may be in range, too. I guess it was Secretary Gates who said back in 2011, you know, 5 years and they'll be able to hit the United States if their technology moves forward. But Japan and South Korea are very uncomfortable positions.
Well, yes and no. I mean, South Korea has always lived with this. And not only the nuclear weapon threat, but, you know, just the 14,000 artillery tubes. So they've always sort of, you know, for them, this is not as groundbreaking. I think for the Japanese, they've had missiles that have always been in reach for their Nodong missiles and some of their other intermediate ones have always been within reach of Japan as well. I think what alarmed the Japanese more than anything else was that the first missile launch in 1998 went over Japanese airspace and over Japan without any kind of warning. And there are a lot of other issues related to that. And that was when it was really came to the public consciousness of the Japanese people itself. So there are domestic issues in Japan that they have to grapple with, which are very significant and important.
And speaking about the people, David Cook, I think something that Americans don't realize when they think about North Korea as a joke, or, you know, The Onion says Kim Jong-un is the most handsome man in America, and the Chinese take that as literal truth, and, you know, all of this starving that we hear about and privation. Fact of the matter is, this is a very nationalistic people, very gung-ho people as far as their country and their leadership.
Yeah, and we do tend to overlook that when we view them either as brainwashed robots or, as you said, as like this sort of joke, which is there's a tremendous amount of repression, there's a lot of propaganda, but North Korea is a real country, and the people tend to be very proud of their country. They're very proud of being Korean. They view themselves as the real Koreans, not those South Koreans who sold out to the West. And, you know, just like we're proud of our Apollo shot, they're doubtless proud that they were able to get a missile into, a satellite launch, before South Korea was able to successfully do it. So there's a bunch of different strands that go on. And North Korea is much more of a coherent country than we tend to think. Reason it survived so long.
We're talking with David King and with Philip Young, and we certainly would like to talk to you as well and have you join this conversation. In fact, let me invite you to join us. We're talking about North Korea successfully launching a missile on Wednesday after many failed attempts, and there's been strong condemnation of that launch, and it really raises an enormous number of questions. You may have questions as well that you'd like to raise, or you may just simply want to join us in conversation here and let us know what your thoughts are or feelings about this. Our toll-free number is available to you right now. It's a half-hour segment, so if you'd like to go on record here, if you have a question or comment, call us now. It's 866-733-6786 to join the program. And again, we welcome your calls toll-free, 866-733-6786. Other ways to communicate with us, you can email us, forum@kqed.org, or post any questions or comments on our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment, or go to our Facebook page or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. And again, we certainly welcome you joining the conversation. Philip Young.
Yeah, just to build on what David was talking about, I think that, again, people sort of underestimate how much a sense of pride, historic destiny, and this national myth that the North Korean people have. And to me, I would argue that this is one of their strategic priorities in terms of foreign policy and what they need and what this new regime of Kim Jong-un needs to promote in order to survive. If you think about it, the North Korean and North Korea has been under a lot of stress over the last 25 years or so. And in certain ways, you know, they are a failed state, but they've become, you know, in many respects, the butt of jokes and derision. In certain ways, which causes us to underestimate sometimes what they're capable of doing. And you know, this has got to grate on them. It grates on these people. And so and it is very difficult for, you know, very proud military officials, party officials, diplomats to keep on going out and hearing that and feeling that. So Kim Jong-un, I think, understands that. And so therefore, that is why, you know, this missile shot internally was so important. Arguably, that could be related to the nuclear weapons testing test and sort of this change of style. When I've talked with people who have come back from North Korea this year, they say there is a palpable sense, and again, this is all anecdotal, that there's a greater lightness there. We'll just see if that's able to continue and Kim Jong-un, the new leader, can sustain that.
Well, he appears to be his father's son, and the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. I mean, he's following up, really, with the satellite launch and trying to, as you say, continue the myth and keep it preserved. Just wondering, though, in fact, in your own case, I know at one time you were pretty hardball when it came to North Korea, sort of like a lot of Cuban exiles are, maybe living in Florida, and you see it much more nuanced now.
Yeah, my father was born in what is South Korea, and my mother was born in what is now North Korea, and in fact, she was born in Yongbyon, which is the site of the nuclear facility. So I grew up believing in incredibly one-dimensional North Koreans as being evil. They were the boogeyman and sources of, you know, discipline in many ways to me in terms of if I acted badly, and I was scared of them. So when I came into government, that was part of sort of looking at North Koreans almost as a caricature. And so what was interesting to me as I got to interact with North Koreans more and more, I realized that it was a caricature. It was a stereotype. And it's not to say I think that the North Korean regime in any way is a good regime, because it's not. But I think it's really important for us to solve a very difficult problem. You have to understand who they are, and you have to see them for what they are. You can't, wish them what the, you can't. You have to, and so therefore, that's the only way you're going to be able to create a solution.
No more cartooning or demonizing. At least that's, I think, the advice I'm hearing, or the wisdom from you. And David Kung, what do we really know though about Kim Jong-un? He's kind of an enigma wrapped in a mystery still. He's just a kid, really.
Yeah, we don't know very much. And in fact, up until about 2 years ago, we had no photographs of him, which is how little we know. We don't even know whether he's actually his actual age. That being said, we now have a year of watching him in action. And from all outward appearances, it looks like he's quite firmly in control, which, as you mentioned at the top of the show, which is one reason I think he's able to fire generals and promote generals. And he's been showing that he's actually in charge. So we're still waiting to figure out what type of attack he's going to take with the outside world, but we're beginning to get some sense of that.
All right, let me go to our callers, and Charles, we begin with you. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, good morning, Michael.
Morning.
Good program. First of all, I'm, you know, relieved that Obama's reelected, because I don't think there's any more competent president we can have to deal with this situation. And my real concern about North Korea is the spread of this technology to some of these outlaw states in the Middle East. And I'll take my comments on the air. Thank you.
Okay. It's a real concern, Philip Yun.
No, absolutely. I think in certain ways, Charles has pointed to what I think is really the biggest issue here. As David said, described before, the balance of military forces on the Korean Peninsula is clearly in favor of the United States and South Korea. So I feel pretty good about deterrence there. What I am more concerned about is really the proliferation of nuclear material and of these missiles. And so that's what we got to really be concerned about. And so, you know, when I look at this launch, the lesson is don't underestimate North Korea. Don't count on them for the regime to collapse, but, you know, you don't panic and you keep your eye on the ball.
And we go to another caller. That's you, Alan, or Ann, excuse me. Welcome.
Good morning. Great show. Thank you for putting me on. How come the focus has been so much on Iran and their nuclear possibilities rather than Korea during the election? And I'll take my comments off the air.
Thank you. David Kung? What do you think about that? There has been certainly concern about Iran, and they're way behind when you look at nuclear production or potential North Korea, probably.
Yeah, and I think they're both major issues. I think the reason Iran's on the on the radar more is because of the neighborhood that they live in, which is extremely volatile. As Philip pointed out, we actually have a pretty good handle on how to deal with North Korea. The situation with North Korea itself is stable. So we're worried about a second-order problem that North Korea eventually might sell the technology, whereas Iran is in this very volatile neighborhood, and there's a number of issues that we don't have any idea how to deal with. So I think the two are different. They're both concerns, but probably Iran is more pressing.
Yeah. Philip, you want to add?
Yeah, I think the other thing is that, well, you know, for all intents and purposes, North Korea already has a weapon, so we have to deal with it in a different sort of context. Iran does not. So, you know, prevention is always better than trying to figure out a cure. And I certainly would like to be in this situation if we could, you know, turn back time to have to deal with North Korea that doesn't have a nuclear weapon yet. There's negotiating room there, I think.
But when you think about all that was sold on the market by Pakistan, particularly by Mr. Khan, to other countries, to rogue states and so forth, this could simply follow suit with North Korea now.
No, absolutely. So that's why we are focusing, and I think the U.S. government in particular is focusing on this nuclear, on the proliferation issue. It's got to be a high priority.
Let me bring another caller on, and that's you, Ralph. Welcome.
I congratulate the Koreans, and I think other U.S. citizens should, too. I think this puts them technologically about where the U.S. and the Soviets were at the end of the 1950s. And if this, you know, I mean, we had our own experience, which unfortunately predominantly used them as a military thing, and I think that clouds our judgment. We should congratulate them and not take them at their word, but congratulate them on their word of using it for research and support that publicly and openly. As we should, as the Iranians say they are doing this for energy independence, we should publicly support them as U.S. citizens on that comment and not be so dominated by our own experience of having, you know, used it predominantly for military means.
All right, Ralph, that is what we... Yeah, okay, thank you. That's what we call a heterodoxical view of things. David Kung, want to respond?
You know, if I would rephrase what the caller said, I mean, in some ways that what the North Korean leadership has been saying all along is it's defensive, their weapons programs are defensive, their missile technology is for research only. And the problem is that on the one hand, they may be right, but on the other hand, the countries in the region and the United States have had a long history of dealing with a country that has shelled islands and killed South Korean civilians. So it's very difficult to make to take them at face value.
Although something else from that call struck me, and that is it has become a little bit of a brinksmanship game that's reminiscent of the Cold War. In fact, I think, Philip Young, you've compared this to the Cold War in some ways, mutual assured destruction or something along those lines. That appears to be the trajectory we're on here.
Well, I think that's true. I mean, you know, the reality is that this is the last vestige of the Cold War, and we're trying to figure out how to deal with this. The reality is at this point is we're on a trajectory if we choose to not figure out if we're not more proactive in how we deal with North Korea, they're going to continue what they have been doing. If the status quo remains as the status quo, they're going to continue to do what they've always done, which is, you know, start negotiations, try to squeeze aid from us, you know, maybe do a little cheating on the way, and then walk away and stage a provocation, and meanwhile learn more about and get better at their missile and their nuclear weapons technology.
Well, so, let me, before we close out this segment, read a listener, Joseph's email. He says, I'm generally a dove when it comes to war prospects, but it's outrageous to me that we would allow such a brutal regime that imprisons innocent people in slave camps and generally submits the majority of citizens to subhuman treatment to exist, much less become a nuclear power. Fear of China aside, why has the world not taken direct military action against Kim and his cronies? On that hawkish note, I want to thank you, Philip Young, David Kung. Another segment, a forum up ahead. We're going to talk about Syria. I'm Michael Krasny.